This is Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast.
The show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We are back again with another turkey hunting episode. Some more Q&A last week. We said we were going to try to keep it to about 30 minutes. We went almost an hour, and at least, Robin, what I've got highlighted on my screen from questions, I think we covered about 5 questions in that hour, and we've got a whole lot more to cover. So while we are sitting here doing our Quarrencast, I feel like I'm hosting from the Thunderdome here, but wanted to just sit down and talk about something other than ozone and COVID-19 and coronaviruses, and focus on some warmer weather and some funner times ahead. Funner times? Did I really just say that? More fun times. So how are you feeling? You ready to attack some more of these questions and share some thoughts and insights around our experiences from turkey hunting?
Yeah, of course. Like you said, it's this 45 minutes or an hour that we're going to spend is just a little escape from being bombarded by the coronavirus discussions and quarantines and people losing their minds and people being afraid. And a lot of people aren't sure what the real truths are. And some people are losing their ability to think rationally, but hopefully everybody is doing their best to be precautionary and stay safe. And I hope that everyone listening kind of escapes with us. And I think that was really the case with last week. The feedback was fantastic, don't you think?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Even had some more questions come in. So I know when we had originally talked about doing something like this, we thought we might be able to get 1 or 2 episodes in. We might be able to do things like this pretty much throughout turkey season, in addition to once you start hunting, and hopefully I can start getting out. I know we talked before early April for youth season to take Jack out, and then mid-April for Missouri, may still get to Kansas. But I think we really probably have enough questions and thoughts coming in that we can make this last. And I don't know about you, I'm recording from the same spot where I sit to work every day of the week. And we've also been having those coronavirus conversations daily with my employer, and how we're attacking that on a nationwide basis and what we're doing and our plans for it. So it's kind of nice that even though I'm sitting in the same spot, I can kind of let my mind drift away from some of those sunny, warm mornings and middays where the birds are gobbling and strutting out in the fields and working birds. So I know I'm really excited to dive in and start to address more of these questions. And I know that as we get into even more questions, that's going to raise even more questions and have even more stories for us to share. So I'll turn it over and start with you. I know you had texted me before some questions. I'm not looking at my phone right at the moment. Any particular question that you want to kick things off with this week?
Well, before we get off the subject of the world's current crisis, I will say that the number one question I'm getting right now is, are you still going? Meaning, are you still going turkey hunting? And I'll just say for the time being, I am certainly planning on going. Not sure, you know, how travel plans might be restricted as far as traveling across state lines and different things like that. But as of right now, I am planning on going on my out-of-state trips. Yes, they're going to be affected. No, I won't be staying at friends' houses whenever I go, as an example. Still trying to, you know, stay with the necessary social distancing and similar requirements. But, you know, let's face it, what better social distancing than being out in the woods away from everybody? So I am planning on going. So that said, let's move on to much more positive questions and discussions.
For sure. And on that too, I would just say, as a recommendation for anybody, if you are planning an out-of-state hunt, reach out to the department, the whatever, like we have the Department of Conservation here, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, whatever it is in those areas that you're planning to hunt, and just make sure that you know of any new rules or laws that have popped up in the state for travel. And if they tell you it's okay to go and you still feel safe going, absolutely. But a quick phone call can certainly help you from making a long drive just to find out that you unintentionally were breaking some sort of new law or regulation.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course, if you're planning on staying in a hotel, if you're traveling and, you know, just need to check on all your plans and see what's up and make the right decision. So.
Good. Well, let's move on to other questions because my smart ass side is kicking in and I almost made a comment about what we were talking about before we started recording. So.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. So I just pulled the list up of questions that I texted you, and I think the first one's a good one. And the question was, what changes? Let me read this again because it doesn't make sense. I said it was a good one. What are the changes for you that you make when bow hunting turkeys as compared to shotgun hunting turkeys?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah. So we kind of talked last week how I have been bow hunting only for many years now, but the changes or the differences are pretty distinct for me. And when I was running gun shotgun hunter, I did not use decoys at all. I never had a need for them. I didn't like to carry them around. But when I'm bow hunting, I always use them. And the reason is very specific. I use the decoys to bring that turkey back even closer to me from what a normal shotgun shot would be, say 25, 30, or even 40 yards. I want them to be 5, 6, 7 yards away. And the decoys are kind of like that finishing touch for me. And so it isn't, you know, it's a lot harder to say, call a turkey to 5 yards as compared to 20 yards. And so the decoys are the tool for that for me. And the second thing is I do pretty much all of my hunting out of a ground blind. Now there's a little bit of discussion there that happens, like, is, you know, why do you hide in a blind? Why don't you just get in the brush, et cetera. And for me specifically, the reason that I almost entirely stick with the ground blind is because I'm always videoing my hunts and almost always have an extra person with me running the camera. And so there's just a lot more going on there, and that's why I choose to hunt out of a ground blind. I think if the turkey hunting for my Texas trip is as good as what I've grown to expect from that place, I'm gonna make it a goal of mine to kill one without a blind on video in Texas. But in essence, the blind is for me really a tool to help make everything easier to get the video job done.
Yeah, you add that extra layer because you're pretty much only ever hunting when you're videoing and not hunting at all if you can't in most cases. And I would tend to agree with you. Again, I've shot birds with my bow in a blind. I've shot birds with a bow out of a blind. I've shot birds with a shotgun in both situations. For myself, really, I think what changes for me, and you had already covered some of those points, decoys, usually if I'm shotgun hunting, I will opt to leave the decoys behind, especially using full body decoys, even if they're somewhat collapsible. If you can let some air out of them, they can be a pain to drag around out in the woods, especially if you've got a long walk. They can make extra noise. So for myself, when I'm shotgun hunting, I'm usually looking for thicker areas if I can, because I'm going without decoys. I want to get into an area where it's not real easy for that bird to see. There's no hen over where I've been hearing that hen calling to me, what's going on, and hanging up at a distance. Also with shotgun hunting, I'm usually looking at, I want to get that bird. I really like them inside of 20 yards, but 20 to 30 yards is kind of that range. I don't need them any closer than that. I'm shooting 3-inch sixes in a 12 gauge with a full choke. So I don't have to be super close. And a turkey is not real dense. And there were some questions about shot placement. With a shotgun, though, I'm aiming for a head, and a turkey's head is not a really tough object. So I'm getting them in, you know, 25, 30 yards. If I can get them in closer, great. Whereas with a bow, like you, especially if I'm going for headshots, I know you use bullheads a lot and go for headshots, you're going to want them in much, much closer. So with a bow, I'm usually looking for somewhere that's going to be a tad bit more open if I have a blind set up, especially to be able to set up a blind. I really like to get in and get the blind set up early. I don't want to be like, oh, there's a gobble. Let me pop my blind up right here and try to get set up. So that's one thing that changes for me. Also shotguns. Usually I'm sitting in front of the tree. I'm going to sit with my back against the tree facing the direction I believe the bird is most likely to come from, or somewhere trying to keep it off to my left, just like we would set up for a bow shot. I'm going to do pretty much the same thing with a shotgun shot to eliminate or at least mitigate the amount of movement that I have to make to shoot that bird. Whereas with a bow, if I'm not hunting in a blind, I actually really like to be behind or to the side of the tree. So if I can have a bird coming in from my left, I'm going to set up on the right side of the tree, and I'm going to leave that for me usually so that I can sit back a little bit, use the tree for cover, draw, and then as that bird clears the trees or wherever it is, I've got that clear shot. I don't want to be in front of the tree with my bow. There's just too much movement if you don't have a blind to be in front of that tree. So I'll keep it either where that bird's coming off my side, or if the bird's coming at me, I'll set up maybe, I'll usually try to get down on my knees and set up a couple feet behind the tree. So that way, again, I can draw the bow and I can duck out. This probably goes back to some of my paintball days and using cover and maybe sometimes hiding behind my gun or my bow in this situation. But that way I can kind of lean over to my right or my left as that bird is working around in front of the tree. So those are some of probably my biggest changes. I'm trying to get them in closer. I'll almost always use decoys if I'm hunting with my bow. I want to get them right there in front of the blind. Especially if I'm videoing, it makes it so much easier. If their attention is focused on those decoys, then looking around at everything else. But those are some of the bigger differences when I'm switching back and forth to try to use that. The only time I'll usually use a ground blind with a shotgun is if I am hunting with a relatively new or a young hunter that doesn't quite realize that you're not going to get away with a whole lot of movement with a turkey. I mean, their eyes are phenomenal. They're picking up that movement. They're looking for it at all times. So I will hunt with a shotgun out of a blind if I'm taking somebody else who is newer or maybe is not as slow moving as they probably should be, in my opinion, to go turkey hunting with me.
Yeah. And a couple things that you just talked about reminded me of something else worth bringing up. For me, a huge difference between shotgun hunting and bow hunting is exactly what you kind of hinted towards, is the setup itself. Whenever back in my shotgun days, or if I was to go out tomorrow somewhere and shotgun hunt, I would pick the very specific spot that I would decide to sit and call to a bird based on that bird not being able to see me or what he thinks is the hen until he's essentially in range. I would always purposely set up so the bird would have to come over a rise, and when he did, he would be in shotgun distance or something similar to that. Where for bow hunting, I'm almost always setting up in just the opposite. I want to see the bird coming for a longer distance, and I want that bird to see me or the decoys for a longer distance, so that his attention's held. And that goes back to what I said. If I wasn't using decoys, you know, if a gobbler could see where he should see a hen for 100 yards, if he just doesn't see one, that kind of would tend to lead to hangups for me. And so I learned that, you know, set up where it's too late for them once they think they should see the hen. In other words, here they come over the rise and I smack them in the face with a load of number five. So,
yeah, I think that really important what you just mentioned about trying to set up where they can't see you, either in something thicker or having them come over that rise to where, obviously, any sort of firearm safety, you don't want to just shoot at a head that you see sticking up over the top of the hill. But once they crest that and get on your side, it's a whole lot easier for you to be able to get situated and have a pretty strong idea, especially if they're gobbling. If they're coming in silent, sometimes it's just sit real still and move nothing but your eyes back and forth and see if you can pick up that white. Oftentimes, I don't catch a lot of red in the woods unless that bird is strutting or just came out of strut. So I'm usually looking for something white or light blue bobbing around. That's normally the color that I catch when I see a turkey kind of picking its way through the thicker underbrush early in the season. some of the other things too, I don't think we've covered, but it would be worth covering. So when you are setting up in a ground blind for bow hunting turkeys, what are you doing to make sure that you're positioned correctly, that inside the blind is going to be as quiet as possible, that you have things where you need them, and you have room for a cameraman since you are taking a camera? And then I'd love to know if you're using tripods or if your cameraman is going handheld, but just anything from inside the blind when you're setting up as far as tips that you've got or how you do it. So somebody else who's going out and maybe setting up like this for the first time ever this spring has some ideas of what's worked for others.
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, if you remember last week, we kind of briefly touched on setting up blinds and how I like to stay mobile and be able to move and go set up on a turkey that is gobbling versus just sitting in the same spot hour after hour after hour. So setting the blind up and everything goes with it really gets to be a system for me. And I'm typically going to be in a pop-up blind like a double bull with a 360 degree window. And so I set my blinds up so that instead of me shooting out towards a flat face, I'm shooting towards one of the corners. In other words, think of a diamond shape instead of a square shape. And I put my seat in the corner furthest away from the shooting window, stay back in the darkness. Kind of like you mentioned earlier, make sure I'm turned the right way so my left shoulder is towards the shooting window. And I keep my bow on a stand right in front of me between my legs. I always have a very specific place for my calls, which is along the wall to my right. My pack is always going to be on my left. And my cameraman is almost always on my left side, too. And we'll tuck the cameraman in the far corner. And we almost always use a tripod, even though we're talking about video and turkeys that are 5 yards away. They're not always 5 yards away when you're wanting to get the footage, you know, right. So it's good for the stability, but it's really also nice to just be able to take your hands off the camera once they're in the decoys and just let it do its thing. So, yeah, we do use the tripod all the time.
Yeah, and that can certainly take up some extra room. So I would encourage anybody who's hunting out of a blind, if you are going to film, that's something you want to keep in mind. I like the bigger blinds for the additional room that you have to be able to have that tripod set up and that person have a folding chair, camp chair, bag chair, whatever they might have to sit on, which, by the way, if anybody who is making blind chairs is listening, your triangle design absolutely sucks. I feel like I have been riding on the world's worst bicycle seat after several hours on those things. So if somebody could make something better or has recommendations for something better than those triangle shaped seats, I'm more than happy to hear those. And I like how you mentioned, too, that you keep your calls in a very specific spot. I know we talked last week that we both use mouth calls probably more than almost anything else. I'll keep my pack. I'll take my vest off that has all my calls and my other hunting gear, and I'll set it on my left hand side. Especially if I'm hunting with Jack or someone else in the blind, I like them to be on my right for whatever reason. But I'll put my pack down on my left hand side. And I'll get out one of my slate calls and I'll set it kind of on top of the pack. And I have a striker in my right hip pocket. So if I do need to switch over, I can just reach down. I'm not looking around. I'm not taking my eyes off of that turkey. I've lost way too many animals of all sorts of species by taking my eyes off of them. So I want to keep my eyes on it at all times, see what's going on, and just be able to reach down and grab that slate and have my striker and everything. I will share, if you're hunting out of a blind, you can get away with a ton of movement that's below those windows. You just have to make sure it's all below those windows. So from my waist up, I'm moving very little. I'm keeping everything down around seat level or lower. I'm fine to move around. You're going to get away with a lot more of that. It's the head going back and forth or leaning up really close to the window so you can peek out and really peer down your right or left or get a better view up that hill because you kind of set up where you can't see all the way up a ridge side, things like that. That's what you really want to avoid, is getting too close to those front windows. That's where those birds are going to pick most up. But when you think about it, a turkey is not a super tall bird. So unless it's standing extremely alert looking around, it's probably not going to be able to see anything above the bottom of that window that you have in your blind.
Yeah. And to build on that, I had mentioned about being back away from the window, just like you, to be, I think the words I used was in the darkness. And that's really the concept of a ground blind. Your camouflage is the darkness. And so any dark colors or black that you can wear on your top half, like you said, the things that are going to be visible through the window, that's going to be your camouflage. And it has really helped me to learn that I need to have a black shirt on. I need to have my hands covered. I usually have enough of a beard these days that I don't worry too much about my face, but certainly a face mask or face paint, black is a good idea. And I see a lot of guys, or hunters, again, I always say guys, that means guys and gals, will be a little PC here, but,
it's a Midwestern thing. We just say guys for everybody.
I know, right. Exactly. But I see them, they'll be in a ground blind and they'll have a lighter camo face mask on. And that just that isn't making sense to me. A light colored camo might be great in the woods, but it's horrible in a ground blind. Just don't do it. I mean, you need to have dark colors and black if you can.
Yeah. Or the darkest possible camo that you can find. Like you mentioned, having that light camo for a face mask or even a hat. I mean, that's really what's moving the most. Your head's moving side to side. It might be moving up and down. Some blinds are better than others. I think that's why you like the 360 windows. Even for shooting, it's better as well. But when you're trying to get around in those windows, it's that upper body. So dark. And I've seen people that take camo netting and hang it up inside the blind. I don't see the point in doing all that. I still wear camo because if that turkey is not cooperating, I want to get out of the blind and go get it. I love eating turkey so much. I want to kill that turkey that I'm going to go get it if I need to go get it. So I still want to have the camo and not be cruising through the woods in my black long sleeve t-shirt and black hat and things like that. But hey, I mean, my dad killed a turkey with me and my son sitting 5 feet behind him. He was wearing blue jeans and a camo top because we were in the blind all morning. But I think what would help a lot of people, if you are concerned about what can be seen, what can't be seen, first, a tip, well, I guess both are tips. Don't sit in front of an open window. You don't need windows open behind you at all. You don't want those windows open. Think about what is going on behind you. You might be moving your head and thinking that you're in the dark, but if you have an open window where light's coming in behind you, that's a blob that's moving through there. And again, those turkeys are looking for that, even if it's a black blob. So I like to keep anything behind me closed up. I got it from you. One of the, I believe it's a double bull blind with the see-through front where you can see through the entire blind except for the back wall is all blacked out. And the reason for that is so that your movement in front of that black wall isn't seen. So do that. Right. But the other thing, I know that in order to kind of prove some things, I've got this massive like 7.5 by 7.5 or 8 foot by 8 foot blind that 5 or 6 people could probably hunt in. But I use that when it's going to be me, my son, my dad. And we were out set up one day and I was moving around. I was looking and my dad's like, man, they are going to see you. And my dad is amazing. I mean, he's taught me everything that I know about turkey hunting. So I usually take his word as gospel, but I got out. And if you really want to see what birds can see, go pop up your ground blind wherever you're at in your front yard. Hell, I set up my decoys out in my front yard. I live in a subdivision with hundreds of houses in it. I don't care. But set up your blind, put out a decoy at any distance and take your camera, even if it's your phone camera, have somebody sit in that blind or you sit in the blind and have somebody go at the head level of your decoy and take a picture towards the blind and see what can be seen from that turkey eye view. Once I was able to do that, that's where my dad even started to realize, hey, I don't have to wear everything camo in here. It's not the same as when I'm sitting against a tree and everything's moving like frozen molasses and it's just all about being super slow. You can get away with a lot more movement once you realize that that turkey's actually looking up into your blind and isn't standing at 5-6 foot tall looking down into those windows unless they're coming down a hill.
Right. And some people listening that maybe are new to ground blinds or new to bow hunting for turkeys might be thinking, wow, this sounds like a lot. Is all that really necessary? But my answer to that would be every little detail that I pay attention to helps equal success. When you're talking about a turkey that could hear extremely well, see extremely well, and is literally five steps away, and you're trying to kill it with a bow. And it is really important, like you mentioned, to keep the back windows closed. It's really important to know which way the sun's going to come up in the morning if it's a morning hunt, and how is it going to be shining on or in the blind, and making sure that you have the sun to the back of the blind and not shining right in the windows. And I've even literally have pulled the stakes from my ground blind while turkeys were gobbling and repositioned that blind without getting out of it, leave my decoys in a spot and kind of spin around them, because I'd been working, and this was in Illinois last year, actually, been working on three gobblers like all morning, and they would come and then they would leave and they would come and leave. And so the sun was getting around as it's shining in the blind. So we literally, while they were gobbling, we repositioned to get the sun into our advantage, and actually ended up paying off. One of those gobblers did finally come in after like 3 hours of working him, and somebody named Robin Parks missed, but that's a whole nother story.
I think I know that guy. So
yes.
When you say you repositioned, did you just like pick up the blind from the inside and move it around the how, or did you just change the direction you were facing in the blind and have the decoys behind you? How was that?
We literally, it was Billy Wheeler with me. Turkeys are gobbling. Keep that in mind, you know, like 75 yards away. We literally pushed everything to the middle of the blind and then moved the blind 3 feet, repositioned all our stuff, moved in those 3 feet. So we stayed inside the blind and moved like, you know, almost 180 degrees around our decoys. So the decoys were still.
I wish I had a video of this.
No, I know it's crazy, but we didn't have a choice because the sun was coming right in on me. I mean, it was just blaring on me. Like, this is 11 o'clock in the morning now, and we'd set up for daylight. And I just knew that if those turkeys came in, there was no way I could do anything without getting picked off with the sun shining on me so, you know, directly. So, yeah, it was kind of a crazy scene. That's what we were joking to each other. Can you just imagine if somebody was at the other end of the field watching us do that?
Like I said, I would have loved to have been in another blind videoing that. I picture this kind of cartoon nuts, thing where people are sneaking in a box and then someone sees them, so they drop the box down.
Yeah.
But you got to do what you've got to do. I mean, be a student of the game. And I think we both really are a student of the game that we're hunting. And what do they need? How do they respond? I mean, no different than in waterfowl hunting. I'll get out and adjust decoys when I'm duck or goose hunting. If winds change, I want to make sure that they're coming into the wind, that I've got the wind at my back or off of a shoulder, kind of quartering at me from behind maybe. So it's the same thing with turkeys. And even if it's not the sunlight, if you've never sat inside a blind in spring, covered in black with a black face mask on, and the sun is beating right down on you, it gets really hard to sit still and be patient and keep your composure when you're starting to bake like you're sitting in an oven.
So, yeah, that particular hunt, like you said, it could be really hot if the sun's hitting you. That was actually like mid-May, the last season in Illinois, and it was a legit 90 degrees. So it was more that it than just being worried about being seen. It was really uncomfortable. I mean, we were sweating bullets in the blind. So all those things just said, if this is going to work, we need to move. So we moved.
Awesome. And I've got a question about temperatures and bird care. But before we get that, I wanted to share a couple tips. We've talked a lot about setup with a ground blind, and not everybody does. My preferred method is actually no ground blind. I don't do self-filming. I've tried it sometimes. It's really tough. The bird has always ended up being just out of frame when I shot it, or I get really frustrated because I used to just let the camera record the entire morning, and then I'd go back and be reviewing footage, and I'd see a turkey that I didn't see when I was actually hunting. It's like, oh, there was something moving in the woods over there. or trying to stay on a turkey when you're looking at that little 2-inch viewfinder. We both use Canon G20 cameras when we're filming. So that little 2 to 3 inch viewfinder is really hard to see a turkey in thick woods that might be 30 or 40 yards away poking around at it. So I don't do a whole lot of that. I love, love, love setting up against a tree, again, being mobile. So this may not blow everybody's mind. Hopefully a lot of you already know this, but if you don't, some of my best tips that, again, I learned from my dad when he started taking me along to screw up his turkey hunts early in my career is when I sit down, I clear all the leaves around within usually about a 2 foot, 2 to 3 foot out from the tree. And I try to fan around so that if I do have to spin to one side or the other, 90 degrees to either side of the tree. So I'll basically make a big turkey fan of clear area around the tree. And if I am moving and I've got a bird and I strike it up within, let's say, 100 yards and it's coming in hot, or I know that I need to be real quiet, it's cool. Turkeys, when they feed, if you've ever heard them come through in the fall or anything, they sound exactly the same in the spring. They kind of, it's a scratch, scratch, pause, scratch, scratch. So I'll do that as I'm clearing around the tree. And I might even throw in some soft clucks or something as I'm clearing it out. But I really want to make sure that area is clear. So if I have to spin my feet or move around or get up on my knees or anything, I'm not rolling onto sticks or thorns or leaves or anything that's going to make any sort of noise. And then the other tip, this was a total game changer for me. If you're setting up early in the morning and you might be there for a while, one of the first things my dad taught me is go look for a log that's 3, 4, 5 inches or so in diameter, a medium size chunk of log laying around, drag that up to the edge of the area that you've cleared out. And when you put your knees up, I love to hunt kind of with my knees up. I'll be my back up against the tree, butt on the ground right against the tree. I love those little stools with the folding legs on them, the really short ones. Absolute game changer for me to set up on. The only time I don't use it is if I have to leave my pack behind and I'm going to go try to chase a bird down real quick. But I'll set that up against the tree. And then I keep my knees at a height where once I lay the gun across my knee and I have this little foam pad, I think maybe Hunter Specialty or somebody sold these things. It's like a little V wedge. I'll put that on my left knee and left or right, doesn't really matter either way, but I'll put that on one of my knees and set that up so that basically when I do that and I have the gun against my shoulder, I'm looking right down the rib of my barrel at that front sight. Or if you're using a red dot sight, you're looking right through that sight to minimize how much you have to lift the gun. I've never had luck trying to pull the gun up off my lap to shoot a bird. Only one time have I ever gotten away with a bunch of movement, and that was the first turkey I ever saw get killed with my dad after I screwed up a turkey that was like 15 feet and I thought I could move. But I'll have the gun all set up there on my knee and kind of pointed in the direction that I think it's going to come from. But then that log, that 3 to 6 inch or so log, 6 inch might be a little big, but you use that to rest your feet up on. If you have ever sat against a tree with your feet down flat on the ground, you'll notice that your legs start to fall asleep or your feet will fall asleep really quickly because of that sharp bend at both your ankle and your knees. So it's a more natural position when you can have your feet kind of angled up, resting the tips of your toes or the balls of your feet up on that log with your heels down on the ground. That's probably one of the best things outside of how to shoot a turkey, how to call a turkey in from just a pure setup perspective when shotgun hunting. That's probably one of the best things I ever learned was the log trick. And again, anything, if you can just get your feet propped up a little bit, you're going to be able to sit there longer without your feet falling asleep or getting uncomfortable to where you start to wiggle and shift and make that movement that usually screws up a hunt.
Yeah, for some of us like me that are getting old, that is even more and more important because, you know, there's even though I'm not shotgun hunting much, if at all, myself, I still do go out and call birds up for other people and find myself, you know, in that old familiar up against a tree set up. And man, I tell you, the difference in my legs falling asleep now that I'm 50 compared to when I was in my 20s is unreal. So that I had never thought of that. It makes perfect sense. And the next time I find myself propped up against a tree, I could guarantee you I'm going to be looking at my feet placement and looking for something to prop them up on.
Oh, I mean, it's awesome. We're lucky. I've said this before. We talked about it on the last time with you. We hunt where there are birds, and we've been pretty lucky. My dad found a spot on our farm, and it's basically the tree. And I would say, I don't know how many turkeys we have taken off of our farm since we started turkey hunting it in 2008, but I would guess that 90% or more have come from within 10 or 15 feet, if not yards, probably more like feet from this tree. And we'll go out, we even cut logs in the summer, and we'll make sure that there's two or three sitting around some of those key spots where we know, if I don't know anything else, if I'm just going to go out and blindly set up in the morning and wait for a turkey, this tree and maybe this spot, we'll get out there and put those logs there so they're around and we're not fighting in the dark to peer around. But I'll take my flashlight, look around, find that log, bring it up. And then the other thing that I meant when you were talking about as you're getting older, one of the things that I've noticed as I get older is my bladder is not as big as it used to be. So I'm going to have to pee a lot. When I talked about cleaning around the tree, I will even clear an area a little bit behind the tree so that when I do have to pee, as gross as this sounds, again, I'm doing it for shooting a bird. I can pee and not be peeing on leaves and make a whole bunch of noise. So I'll clear out a little bit of a spot even behind the tree for me so I can slowly stand up, lean against the tree, pee behind the tree, and then get back and sit back down if there are turkeys working. So, covered a lot there on setup. We have some other setup questions. I'm still waiting. We've got some guests in the work that I want to ask some of these other setup questions, but I do want to go back to maybe, and I know we're getting close to about the 45-minute mark here or so, and I want to keep this to no more than an hour. We've got enough to make several weeks of content with these questions. You mentioned hunting in May, and it was like 90 degrees. One of the questions that had come in from one of our listeners is, what do you do to care for a bird in the field? So let's say you're getting those. I've had turkey hunts before where I was dressed warmer than I dressed for a mid to late season bow hunt for deer. And I've had turkey hunts where I really was wishing that I was wearing shorts under my bib overalls to try to stay cool enough and have a t-shirt on. So how do you, especially when it's warm outside, how do you care for a bird to make sure that it doesn't spoil or go to waste after you've shot it?
That's a good question. And let's build on that just a little bit. I've killed turkeys and pretty much do every spring in temperatures that range from below freezing to almost 100 degrees, literally. Two springs ago, I really did go from the extreme at one part of the season in the 20s. And then at the end of May, I killed one. And when I left my truck, it was 98.5 degrees. So turkeys can be killed in all of those ranges of weather, and you know, the typical crisp spring morning that turns into a nice warm but not hot afternoon, those are awesome. That's what we all love and think about for spring turkey hunting, but that doesn't always happen. And so back to the original question, for me, whenever I kill a bird, no matter what the temperature is, I pretty much take care of all of them the same way. And that is simply, as soon as I get back to the truck or to my house or to the hotel or to a buddy's house, whatever that situation is, I don't waste any time. I throw it on the tailgate. I cut the tail off. I cut the feet off. I cut the beard off. And then the next thing is I lay it back down on the tailgate, make a little slit in the skin, and just pull the skin all the way off the breast, lay the breast meat off each side, and then pull the skin down over the thighs and the leg, and cut the leg away from the body right there at the joint of the thigh. I do that for each leg, and that's that. I don't mess with trying to gut a turkey. I could do that whole process in about 3 minutes. Usually it doesn't take very long, and there's never a reason that I'm in a situation that I have to wait very long. So even if it is super hot outside, I'm never more than, you know, 20 minutes or so from being able to do that. And if I was, I would just do that as soon as I was done with my field photos, if I had to do it right on the spot, I could do it because it doesn't take much of a knife to get it done.
Yeah, I think same thing. It's not quite like a deer. I mean, even though it's really warm out and there's a bunch of insulation through those feathers, if you've ever tried to pluck a bird, I plucked my whole bird last year hanging it up. If you are going to do that, being able to hang it up by the feet made a world of difference instead of trying to mess around with it on the ground. But I don't get too overly concerned if I am waiting. I know there have been some years where you had mentioned photos and my dad was out. I got a bird and didn't want to mess up his hunt. So I just grabbed the bird and snuck back to camp. And before we had our shed, I hung it up in a tree in the shade. I just took some old shoelaces that I had, made a couple loops around just underneath each one of the spurs and hung it over a branch in the tree. I guess that's why they call them limb hangers. The spurs weren't what was hanging it from the branch, but keeping it from falling. And I just let it hang there until he got back. We can only hunt till one here in Missouri, so I knew it was only going to be another hour or so. But you don't have the same, we're not getting into the body cavity and pulling out loins or anything like that. So you don't have to worry so much about the guts. If I am in a hurry or I want to get something done quickly, I didn't see, especially with a wild bird, I didn't notice anything that made plucking the whole thing easier. Last year, I had the time to do it and figured why not. I mean, I shot the thing at 5 minutes after legal shooting time. It was one of those rare instances that came down and walked right into me. But I would just breast it out. And I'm going to clarify this here in a moment. So like you, make a small slit just under the breastbone. I'll peel some of the feathers back right there where I'm going to make that initial cut. Get my fingers in there, and the warmth actually helps. You can almost just peel that skin right back. I don't try to keep the skin on the turkey when I'm doing a breast out or anything. I don't think it matters quite as much. I haven't noticed an improved flavor by keeping the skin on it. So make that small incision, peel the whole thing back, and I will peel that breast all the way up to the top of the breast, to the wishbone, up by the turkey's neck, really getting into the crop. Once I get into the crop or that diaphragm, that balloon area, I don't know what the technical term is for it, but when you hear a bird drumming, where it's making that drumming sound from, I'll skin it all the way up to there, run my knife, if you find the keel bone right in the center, so the bird is laying on the ground or on the tailgate, belly up, wings out to the side. I might even put my knees on the wings if I need to, usually don't have to. You can even break them to get them to lay flat if you really need to. But I'll take my knife once I've got it skinned, and I will start up at the top at the wishbone area, and I'll try to find the center. And this is where I find those razor blade type knives come in very, very, very handy to be able to work through this. I'll run it down each side of that keel bone all the way down to the rib cage, and then I just start to peel off. It's almost like for deer hunters out there, when you're peeling off the back strap, or really what's the loin on a deer, not the tenderloins, but on the outside, it's the same way. You're just following the rib cage around. I'll peel that all the way down to the wing, trim it off, and then I'll actually even take the thighs. I love to use the thighs for soup stock or to smoke them low and slow for a real long time. I don't do it on every single bird, but if I can, especially if I didn't body shoot it with a bow and maybe damage some of the thigh meat, I'll take the thighs out of it as well. And it's all right there. You can get to it very easily. And like you said, I mean, it's a few minutes. It will take you a while longer the first few times. So don't get upset if you're not able to get this all done in a handful of minutes. But take your time, work down that keel bone, peel the breast meat off. I haven't found a lot of meat on the wings to make those worth taking unless I'm going to do a mount or something special with the wings. Or some people like to have a wing for fly down sounds. I'll just beat my hat against my leg if I really want to try to get that fancy, which is hardly ever, but same way. And then I use gallon Ziploc bags. I'll even take them if I think I might have to do it in the field. I'll take about 3 gallon Ziploc bags and I'll stuff them in one of the big pockets in my hunting vest and take those out there with me. You can usually get turkey breasts are freaking huge. Even on a Jake, a breast, a skinned out breast is much larger than what you're used to getting in the store. So about 1 breast per Ziploc bag and then both thighs in another Ziploc bag, and you've got a lot of great meat. But I've never worried Maybe if I were hunting somewhere all day, I wouldn't wait until the evening to skin that bird out. But as soon as you've got some time, go ahead and clean that thing out. Keep whatever you need to keep to identify it during transportation. Some places might make you keep a leg or something with it. It's not like ducks where you usually have to keep a wing attached, but keep whatever you need. Throw that in a small cooler, run up to a gas station if you've got one nearby. Kind of like what we talked about late last season with warm weather deer hunting. Make sure that you have some way to cool that down, but it's usually not going to spoil real fast. You don't usually get into the guts much on a bird, especially shotgun hunting. You should never be in the guts with it. So that's what I do also to care for a bird in the field. And said that boneless, skinless breast that you've got, it's going to fry up or cook up real nice. I would not worry. In my experience, it was not worth it for me to pluck that bird. But if you are, that's where warmth is going to help you out. It can really help those small feathers pull out a whole lot easier when that bird is warm.
Yeah, I've plucked exactly one wild turkey in my life. And that was the first turkey I ever killed back in the late 80s or whenever that was. That was my first and last. And unlikely I will ever do another one like that again.
Yeah, I did it because I had the time. I wasn't going anywhere. I already had the weekend off here in Missouri. You can only shoot one bird a day, regardless of where we are in the season. And the second 2 weeks, you can get both your turkeys. You can fill both tags in the same week, but again, not in the same day. So had the time, figured why not? I'll mess around. And I had everything. I put it up on the deer gambrel. I just tied it up in there, and I've probably got some pictures I could post on our social media of the thing hanging there fully plucked and ready to go. But to me, just not worth the extra effort that it's going to take. And if you don't have a place to hang it, it is a super mess trying to do that down on the ground. You've got feathers everywhere. The feathers are sticking to your hands. So that's why that small cut. And then I just peel everything back. I don't worry about trying to make a cut all the way up the chest like it's a deer. Once you get under that skin on a warm bird, it's all going to open up really easy for you to be able to take that. And then once I'm done and I've got everything off of that bird that I need, like you, I will cut the legs off. I usually like to let the legs dry out a lot, and then I'll cut on each side of the spur. That turkey leg is actually hollow on the inside. So I'll cut that off. At some point in time, I might make a necklace or string up a bunch of spurs or something like that. Who knows? But I'll keep that. I keep the beard, and I also keep the tail. So probably, unless you've got another question as well, final question from me for this week is, you mentioned you cut off the tail, the beard, the legs. Where are you making these cuts? And I know it's probably hard to describe without pictures or a video, but if somebody is wanting to keep that stuff to make a fan mount or something like that, what tips do you have for making sure that they're doing it correctly and they're not shortchanging themselves or putting themselves in a position where that mount's going to turn out really terrible?
Well, the beard is pretty easy. And some people, some friends that I know do this method. If you could grab the beard in your hand, make sure you have all the strands and just give it a sharp jerk outward, you can actually just pull the beard out without cutting it at all. Now,
I've never actually tried that myself.
Because one time I came away with about four of the strands because I didn't hold it right. Oh. So I'm gun shy of that now. So I actually just pull the beard pretty hard, so it's really pulling out away from the breast, and I just cut it really close to where the feathers are. In other words, the skin where the feathers start to grow. So when I cut my beard, there's very, very little meat on the end of it. The less meat you have on the end of that beard, the less you got to worry about spoiling and salting down and all that. So without overcomplicating that, that's what I do with that. The feet, I just go up the feet to the first joint. And like I said, I'm usually cleaning mine on the tailgate. Sometimes it might be like a picnic table, but I'll bend those backwards over the edge of the tailgate until they snap. And then I can just take my knife and go around the skin and stick the point in the joint, and they'll come right off. So I'm really just kind of disconnecting that joint for each feet. And I'm kind of like you, like I'm really saving the feet so I could get the spurs off later. And To be honest, you know, I've got a refrigerator in my garage. It's got a whole pile of feet, a whole pile of beards. And I keep thinking I'm going to do something cool with those, and I haven't yet, but I do save all of them. Then the last thing is the tail, and the tail is a little more tricky to try to describe into words. It's way easier to show it, but I grab the tail while it's folded up. I don't fan it out. So when it's just in its normal folded up position.
So you're bunching it up almost like you're grabbing a handful of spaghetti, right? It's all together.
Exactly,
you're not spreading
right.
It out.
That's a great way to put it. And I'll just hold that in my left hand, and then I'll take my right hand and I'll feel where the tail meets the body, and you'll feel like it's almost like a notch on each side of that. And I guess it's, in essence, it's like a join. It's really, if someone will just feel there with your hand, the way I'm describing, the way you described grabbing the tail, you'll understand. I know it's weird the way I'm saying it, but there's a kind of a notch on each side. And that right there is where I cut. I just take my knife, stick it in one side, and just cut straight across to the other side. And where it comes off, you're going to have all the feathers you need on that tail for a display. I used to be really worried, like, what feathers go with what, but if you'll just grab it and cut it there where that notch is on each side, you'll have all you need. And then of course you'll have some meat on there that needs to be salted down or boraxed down so that you don't have spoilage.
Yeah. I think, again, great tips, on the tail too. I do the same thing. I'll usually look for the butthole. I mean, it sounds gross, but fold it up, hold that whole tail in my left hand, usually with the butt pointing up, and you find those two notches that you're talking about, kind of feel for them with your thumb on one side and your forefinger on the other, and then I'll take my knife and I start from that back side and kind of go up around the butthole a little bit, and you're always better to cut heavy. You can take more off later if you need to, but don't trim yourself up short. You're better to err on the side of taking off too many of the back feathers as you're peeling that up and getting ready to trim it, but it'll come off with pretty much everything you need to have a really nice fan mount if you use one of those little semicircle fan mount plaques that can come to mount those in. Same exact thing with the legs. The one thing that I would mention for anybody who might be going out and getting their first turkey, I also save all my beards. I have no idea where they all went. I don't do a very good job of keeping them in one place. I'm not the most organized person in all of the world. So I will, on that, you mentioned, give it a good tug or pull out on it. There's almost a knot, kind of like the knot that's going to be at the end of that turkey leg that's still left of the actual drumstick when you take the bottom portion of the legs off, or that little knot that's on the bottom of a chicken drumstick. There's a knot like that right at the end of the beard where everything connects. So I'll pull out and I'll kind of feel for my fingers below the feathers for where that knot is. And then I cut right behind that knot. And like you said, that's what helps me be able to keep too much meat from being left on and then having to do a bunch of salting and worrying about everything else to keep that beard. But usually I will, if I've shot it with a shotgun and it's a really nice one and I'm not going to do some sort of other mount with it, I will keep the beard and the shotgun shell. And once the beard is all salted, I'll usually either twist tie or stuff the beard down into the shotgun shell, just as having that memory of that particular bird. But yeah, I don't know why I save all the beards. I guess because I feel like I'm being wasteful. I think half the time they end up just getting pitched or lost, or who knows if cats come into the garage, if we leave the garage door open and are grabbing them or what happens. But I couldn't tell you where most of the beards from my last several birds have ended up being.
Yeah, there's no telling how many beards and tails and feet I have in that refrigerator downstairs. I salt them down and then throw them in that fridge, and the fridge dehydrates and dries out whatever, you know, meat there is. And I'm like you, like, it's kind of like a buck, you know. I have every antler or rack off of every buck I've ever killed, no matter how big or small, and I just don't feel right about not keeping them. And it's the same way with those quote unquote trophy parts from a gobbler. I'm not doing a very good job of doing anything with them, but I'm glad I have them all.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, it came from my dad. My dad still has at this point this really badass deer hide that he did a self tan on way back in the day, probably even before I was born. It hung in my room forever, and he had saplings that framed the deer hide and used like baling twine and everything, so it looked super cool. He hung some traps off of the top corners of some of the saplings, and then he had all these turkey beards, which for probably the first 10 years of my life, I believed him when he said they were Indian scalps, but he saved them all, and I always thought maybe I was going to do something like that and just never did. So if anybody's got any really cool tips on what to do with your spurs or your beards, we'd love to see the pictures. Definitely email us, post them up on our social media accounts. I think it would be awesome to see and have us be able to walk away with some tips or ideas on what we could do with all these things that we get where we feel like we need to hold on to them, but we're not quite sure what we're going to end up doing with them. So, Robin, we're at about the hour mark for this week. Unless there's anything else that you have, I mean, I think I'm good on my end as far as questions. I still have more questions that aren't highlighted on my list here than are. And I'm only highlighting the ones that we've covered on the show. So we've got a lot more to talk about. But anything else that you want to make sure that we cover this week? Before holding off and coming back again next week with more questions, more answers, maybe some more information around decoy setups, anything like that.
No, I'm kind of like you. Like, it just seems like we're barely even touching the amount of questions that's been sent to us. And it's good because we start talking about those questions and then, you know, we just kind of get lost in all these other little fingers, but it's all turkey hunting, so it's all good. Certainly, we probably should let our listeners know that, probably next week, I'm thinking, don't you, Logan, that it'll be, we're going to have folks from DSD Decoys on the phone with us, along with Derek Craig. And we have had a ton of questions about decoys and decoy use and decoy setups and where to put them, and it'll be a great time to go over those. And
it's been so hard for me to avoid. I look at these questions, and we got into a little bit of it today, and I'm like, oh, I want to hold off, and we can definitely ask again, but I'm super excited for the Dave Smith guys to be able to, Dave himself. I think we're going to have a couple folks, maybe Brian, joining us as well. Like you mentioned, Derek. So I'm super excited to geek out over decoys with those guys in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I did the same way. Like, we've kind of touched a little bit on decoys. I mentioned my decoys are 5 yards. I'm sure people are like, 5 yards? Why 5 yards? And where do you put them and all that? And we'll certainly get into that. And I'm anxious to talk about it too. And I think maybe next week we'll touch on another big question has been shot placement with an arrow on a turkey. And we'll get into that too. And I've got some really specific thoughts on that, and I know Derek Craig does too, and we'll certainly talk about shot placement, but not just headshots. We'll get into body shots too for the people that want to be body shooting. So a lot to come, and, you know, I'm glad there's a lot to come and a lot left to talk about, because turkey season's almost here, and what better way than, you know, to get fired up for it than to talk about it.
Absolutely. And especially because it's so short for people like me that rarely hunt out of their own area. At least here in Missouri, we get 3 weeks. Usually the first week, I always try to go opening day just because it's tradition to make sure that I'm out there on opening day. I think I've only ever missed two, and those were both because of work, even though it's usually not as effective as later in our season. But when you only have 3 weeks to hunt, whereas with archery season for deer, we've got, 4 months or something like that. I love being able to really stretch out how long we can be focused on turkey hunting. And even if I'm not hunting, just talking about it is a great close second.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess here we're recording this on Saturday, so everyone will be listening on Tuesday, but my fingers are crossed that a week from today, I'll have at least one turkey in the cooler already, and maybe more to come. And I'm getting pretty excited.
It's going to be here before we know it. Hopefully everything works out for you. And I know as we're wrapping up here, I'm getting some looks as the family cruises by the little office/bedroom/recording studio/where I store all of the crap I don't know where I'm going to put anywhere else. I think we're going to wrap up and go do some social distance from the truck and take a little cruise and just go see something other than the inside of the house. So it was great to be able to think about things outside the house and still be able to continue these conversations. Like I said, really looking forward to in the coming weeks. We don't have an exact date nailed down just yet, but to talk more about decoys. So keep your questions coming, thoughts, feedback, ideas, your own tips and best practices. Let us know what those are. Again, at Hotshot Archery on Instagram or Facebook. As far as I know, we're not around on Twitter. I try to avoid Twitter like it's the plague, like it's the coronavirus. But Facebook or Instagram, you can message us, DM us, post up a comment on any of our posts. You can also email any questions that you've got to podcast@hotshotmanufacturing.com. If you happen to know myself or Robin in person, you can text us your questions. I know, Robin, you've had several people text you with some questions about turkey hunting. So keep them coming. We love talking about this kind of stuff. So we could probably do this all year if we really needed to or wanted to. So keep everything coming. Appreciate everybody who has been subscribing, who's sending us feedback, letting us know what you love about the podcast. Keep telling your friends about it. The more you're sharing, the more people are subscribing, the easier we are to find. And I know, at least for me, it really helps drive that motivation to make sure we're finding time to sit down and talk each week. So, Robin, I appreciate your time. I know we've kind of cut some of these short, but any parting shots as we are getting ready to wrap up?
No, let's just get back to reality with this parting shot. Just everybody be safe, be cautious, wash your hands, and stay calm. And hopefully the world will be back to what we call normal sooner than later. And I do really appreciate everybody that's listening, and I hope that everybody is staying well.
Yeah, well, you stole my parting shot. Again, it's take this stuff seriously, listen, but don't panic. We're all going to make it through this together. There are worse things than having to hunker down by yourself and keeping 6 to 10 feet between you and others. And one of the best places to do that is in a ground blind or a base of a tree. So I know we're both really excited about that, but just keep your head on straight, stop the panic buying. And we're going to make this through it just like we have made it through any other disasters or catastrophes that hit. We always come out better on the other side. So just stay focused on the things that are making you happy and don't worry too much about what other people are trying to tell you. Regardless, there are very few actual experts out there, including either of us on this podcast here today. So just keep doing what you're doing, but listen and take this as something that is serious if we don't, and minimize the panic that you have. Stay calm, just like you're hunting. I always tell myself, stay calm. If I'm getting too excited because a bird's working its way in, or I know I've got a deer coming into range. So just like I would do in a tree stand or a ground blind or from the base of a tree, just keep telling yourself to stay calm and it'll all work out. Just follow the process. So again, really appreciate everybody. Robin, appreciate your time. I know we've all got things that we could be doing on a Saturday, and you've got prep work for your hunt. So thank you so much for hanging out with me this morning and getting me through a couple cups of coffee as we talk turkey hunting.
Right. Thanks. And thank you, everybody.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.